Hi, this is Vic Mignogna, Captain Kirk from Star Trek Continues, and guess what? You're listening to the Shuttle Pod.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 23rd episode of the Shuttle Pod, the TrekMovie.com podcast. Today is Wednesday, September 28th. I'm Kaylee Iacovino, and I am joined by...
Hey, it's Brian Drew.
And today, being our 23rd episode, or the A Taste of Armageddon episode.
Ah.
Last time was our Space Seed episode. That was a good one. Today's A Taste of Armageddon, because, of course, that was the 23rd episode of the original series.
Of course.
And today, we're going to be talking about a recap of what happened at Mission New York. That was the big Reed Pop and CBS convention in New York that happened a few weeks ago. And then the latest in Star Trek gaming, some of which we got to see at Mission New York. So, Brian, you were there along with a whole host of other Trek movie crew members. Tell me about the con.
I was underwhelmed by it. I think a lot of people were, although to be fair, I did talk to a few people who really enjoyed it. It was in the Jacob Javits Convention Center in New York City, and it was probably too big a venue for the convention that they had. Mm-hmm. They claim they had about 10,000 people at the event, and it's entirely possible they did, but because the Javits is so large and spread out, there was no real way to ascertain that.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the size of the venue, the place felt sparsely populated at times. And I guess that kind of made the entire environment feel a bit cold and impersonal. Part of the problem, I think, is that a lot of us are used to creation events, which tend to be a little smaller in nature. And I think maybe that's, what am I trying to say?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think if you've only been to creation conventions before, which a lot of the main Star Trek conventions, I guess the only official Star Trek only conventions have been creation, right, in recent memory. And so, you know, if that's all you've experienced, I feel like this is definitely more sort of a mini New York Comic Con or a mini San Diego Comic Con in right. the way that it was run.
Right. Like, this venue is used for New York Comic Con.
Right. Which is huge. That's right. What I didn't even realize until you told me that. It's like the same size as San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah. That's massive. Yeah, it's massive. It's absolutely massive. And the Javits absolutely makes sense for an event like that. Because
mm-hmm.
they literally fill every square inch of the Javits.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, even when they announced this convention, this Mission New York thing, I thought it was the Javits was an odd choice simply because I knew that there was no way in hell they were going to fill up that venue.
Yeah, I wonder if, because Reed Pop runs New York Comic Con, you know, maybe they had a relationship with the Javits that they were able to exploit to get a good deal or something for this con. You know, I wonder if that's part of the reason it was there.
It could be. It could be.
Because New York seems like such a great place to have a convention, but for what I understand from you, people who live in New York and people who went to the con, is that the Javits is just in the middle of nothing, and there's no there's no place to, a bar to go hang out at or a restaurant. Right. Everyone just kind of, the convention ends, the last panel closes down, and then everyone just goes home.
Yeah, everybody spreads to the winds. Yeah, Javits is on the west side of Manhattan, right near the Hudson, right next to the Hudson River, and it's kind of an island unto itself, really. I mean, when we went out on Saturday night, myself and the rest of the Trek movie crew, we took a cab to get where we needed to go.
Yeah.
And you can't walk anywhere. And another issue with the Javits being the only game in town in that area is the food that they were serving was absolutely appalling.
Ooh.
I mean,
that's so good, because you really need fuel throughout the day.
Yeah. I mean, imagine the worst kind of ballpark food you've ever had.
Yeah.
And multiply it by two.
At ballpark prices as well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty awful. I mean, the only place that was serving anything remotely good was the Starbucks that was up near the main hall, which has a lot of that grab and go kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that's not like a meal.
No, yeah. No. So, like I said, that was an issue. And again, I think a lot of us are spoiled from being at, say, the Las Vegas convention that Creation runs, where everything is in one space. Mm-hmm. You're in a casino with like five or six different restaurants and bars and everything else. And, you know, you get to hang out with your friends pretty much nonstop. This is completely unlike that. So, I mean, that's not this convention's fault, but I definitely think it was an issue for a lot of people. What else? Like I said, like everything was kind of spread out. Like the dealer's area was far away from the main hall, which was also far away from where the autographs were being staged. Mm-hmm. Where the actors were was like a dungeon. Like they put them in the basement of the I swear to God, it was awful.
Like for signing, for doing signings?
For signings and photo ops. Yeah, ugh. I mean, it was like a dungeon. It was this dingy, gray mess. And some of the actors, and I'm not going to say which ones, were not happy at all.
Oh, that's too bad. Because they're relying on, you know, having a good setup so they can make their money when they come to these things.
Yeah, and some of them were, like, kind of tucked into corners where you barely knew they were there. So, like, that wasn't good.
What about the panels, though? Because I feel like the programming was sort of a cut above what we're used to.
Yes, I would agree with that. There was definitely more of a variety. There was a lot more, say, fan-driven kind of stuff, including from our very own Amy Imhoff.
Yeah, I heard really good things about Amy's panel. She had two, actually, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. Amy did have two. A lot more, like, personalized stuff. Like, you know, like, Mark Altman sat down with Rod Roddenberry for an hour just to talk about Gene's philosophies and, like...
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah, stuff like that was definitely cool. There was a lot of science kind of stuff. There were a bunch of NASA astronauts at this event.
Yay for science track, because that's something that like has basically gone away at the Creation Con, so I know.
Yeah, it's very hit and miss. Some years they have NASA stuff, some years they don't.
Well, I know like one of the guys who does a lot of the science stuff at the Las Vegas Con is a friend of mine, Dr. David Williams from Arizona State University. Right, and he's a professor at Arizona State, and he works on a lot of NASA missions. And so he talks about sort of the latest in NASA missions. And I know in the last, certainly this last year, he had said to me, I'm not sure what's going on. It sounds like they're just not going to do the science stuff. So that's a big bummer when that kind of stuff happens. Because it's like everything at Creation is just the actors on stage. Like that's the big draw.
Yeah, well, although I think, to be fair to them this year, I think it was so driven by the anniversary that things were a little different than they normally might be. It was,
that's true.
And the Javits, because of its size, has a lot of different smaller rooms that you can, like, use for panels. So it's easier to, like, just...
Yeah, and they had what, four stages or something? They had a lot of different stages.
Yeah, they had a lot of smaller rooms, a couple of stages, and then they had the main stage, which I think sat like 3,000 people, 2,500? I forget. That in itself was a source of controversy. Some conventions, when you go to a panel, the crowd gets cleared out after the panel concludes. Mm-hmm. They did not do that at this convention. So mm-hmm. there was a lot of squatting going on basically. And that became an issue initially on Saturday when people were not getting into the TNG panels and a lot of people got very upset. Now, again, this is pretty standard kind of thing that happens at a lot of conventions. But if you're used to going to a Creation convention where they only sell tickets for the amount of seats that they have, you know, people who are used to Creation conventions are not used to being denied access, especially if they've paid, you know, for premier passes or whatever to go to this thing.
Well, and to be fair, I would argue that it's, you know, they're, like I said, they're treating this, it seems like they're treating this sort of like a mini New York Comic Con where you have all of these different genres of things. And so if, you know, Nathan Fillion is on stage, he may be a huge draw and you'll fill that room, but there's 20 other things going on, like Star Wars and Star Trek and fantasy stuff and anime stuff that some of those fans might not care about seeing Nathan Fillion. So, but if you're at a Trek only event and you have, you know, people from some of the writers from the new show on stage or like the TNG cast on stage, everyone in the building is going to want to go to that one panel. So I feel like it's harder to do that multi-stage kind of programming with these big, big events, like big headliner people like William Shatner at a Trek-only convention.
Right. Yeah, so that was an issue. Like I said, a lot of people get very upset. And to be fair to the ReadPop folks, they did try to accommodate as much as they could. They did add some seating to the main hall on Sunday, because Sunday was Walter Koenig and Shatner. And obviously Shatner was going to be the main attraction. He was the headliner of the convention. So like they packed the room as best they, you know, they accommodated it as best they could, but yeah, a lot of people got left behind. So I think that left a bad taste in many folks' mouths. For those of you that want to know more, our colleague Rich wrote a editorial about the situation and the event overall on the website. And I believe we posted it last week. So if you want to dig that up.
And I'll throw a link to that in the description of this podcast on the
website. Even better. Oh, the Discovery panel, which was extremely underwhelming.
Yeah. Well, we were wondering if there was going to be a big reveal of some kind, seeing as CBS was putting together the convention. You know, it was in New York, so it's near where they're going to be filming, and you know, everything was sort of coming to a head. And then the big announcement was that they're going to be doing novels along with the show, right?
Right. Yeah. There's going to be a certain amount of integration and coordination between the show and licensed products like novels and comic books, which is cool. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's a really great thing.
But
and
we were
should,
like,
in this day and age, that should be happening.
We were hoping for like, you know, them to announce some of the actors or something big.
Anything. Who's going to compose the music? Anything. The utter lack of any kind of information was so disappointing. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was cool to see Nick Meyer. I've never seen Nick Meyer in person before, so it was cool to see him. But, like, you could tell, like, that they were almost uncomfortable. He and Kirsten Baer, they were kind of just, like, they didn't have a lot to say. They were, like, handcuffed. Well,
yeah, it's probably because they've muzzled them, right?
Yeah, it was, I'm totally speculating, but, like, there was signage all over the building promoting that. There were signs for Discovery. They were like, you know, don't miss the Discovery panel, blah, 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 blah. I suspect that at one point they did have something they were going to say, and then possibly because they knew they were going to have a delay,
it didn't come together.
They pulled it back.
Yeah.
Because they really did hype it. There was signage all over the place. And then to, you know, don't make sure you don't miss this panel. And then you get there and there was little to nothing worth discussing.
Yeah, that's too bad.
So that was disappointing. I know I'm dwelling on all the negatives here. I don't mean to. I guess I just came away from it being underwhelmed by the whole experience.
Yeah.
Which surprises me, because Reed Pop has a sterling reputation. I mean, I have heard nothing but good things about people who, I mean, I've obviously been to New York Comic Con, and I have friends who go to Star Wars Celebration who rave about how well it's done.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we had our expectations dialed up to something, you know, impossible to do. And then it ended up being, I mean, you know, and it's the first time they're doing this con. There are going to be some hiccups.
Yeah. It did feel kind of uncoordinated in spots. It just felt.
Well, I mean, tell me if you agree with this again, because I wasn't there, but it seems like the consensus of people who I've talked to about it is it was good, not awesome, but it was good. It had some negatives. They would hope that it happens again, but not at the Javits Center.
Yes, I would agree with that. Yeah, I would love to see another New York convention, absolutely. But yeah, the Javits is not the right venue for it. Definitely not. No way. I'm not sure why they chose the Javits, but I mean, there are so many hotels in New York City that are full of, like, you know, ballrooms that could, you know, accommodate.
Yeah, sure.
You would think, but maybe, who knows? I'm talking out of my ass. For all I know, maybe they looked into all that, and they, nothing was, you know, available. You know, New York is, I think part of the problem they have too is that New York is so expensive these days.
Yeah, no kidding.
Trying to find the right venue.
It's expensive to travel to and to stay in a hotel nearby for people who are visiting from out of town.
Right, and the food is expensive because you're right in the middle of, like, you know, near Times Square, so you're paying a premium for that too. And, you know, I'm sure it was a big juggling act for them to do it. And I am happy that they did it. I think it's cool that they recognize that a lot of Star Trek's fandom actually began in New York City. With the first convention in 72.
Yeah, and I heard there was a good panel about that, too.
Yes, a bunch of the folks who ran the first several conventions sat down for a panel, and that was super cool.
See, that's,
I was so happy they did that.
That's really cool. That's the kind of thing I want to go to a convention for.
Yes, that stuff's important.
Like, the celebrities that are gratifying. Cool, but...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was gratifying. That was, like, that was cool, like, just the way, like, when... Similar to how I felt when we saw Bijo and John mm-hmm. Trimble get saluted when we were in Vegas for all their contributions. It's important to recognize, you know, like you said, people that are not actors or writers and stuff like that. Yeah. The fans who actually kept Star Trek alive so that you and I could enjoy it today.
Exactly. There would not be a Star... We were saying when we were in Las Vegas, we were saying we wouldn't be here in Las Vegas if it weren't for those two people on stage, John and Bijo Trimble. So
that's right.
Yeah, mad props.
Yep. So what else was there? Oh, the merch room was in a large area, and most of it was kind of corporate-based. There was a lot of, what is the name? Avonos? The costume
Anovos.
Company?
Yeah, Anovos.
Anovos was there. Rod Roddenberry was there with his crew.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of, like, you know, Star Trek Online was there, and Star Trek Bridge Crew. Mm-hmm. Was there.
And Timelines, Star Trek Timelines.
And Star Trek Time. Yeah, a lot of video games, some of the board games. That new Star Trek Ascendancy board game was there. But less of the mom and pop kind of places that we normally see at these kind of conventions. It was pretty corporate.
Mm-hmm. It's always good if there's a mix, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of disappointing. But they did have different things than what was in Vegas, so that was cool. Mm-hmm. For instance... Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Ooh, yes. Okay. I've been dying to hear what you thought about Star Trek Bridge Crew.
So for those of you who don't know much about it, it's a virtual reality game that Ubisoft is putting out. It will be out in the beginning of December. It takes place in the Kelvin timeline, and you have the option of playing as the captain or a tactical helm or engineering. And I was assigned engineering. You know, they put you in a little area with a bunch of other folks, and you're all sitting there, you know, in front of a laptop with wearing a headset. And it is kind of surreal to walk into an area and see people, you know, kind of clawing at thin air, you know, because, like, they're all wearing these headsets, and you can't see what they're, you know, you can't see what they're seeing, but they're making all these weird motions. It's kind of surreal. Anyway, it was, I have to say, I was completely blown away by it. Oculus Rift was what it was running on, which is Facebook's proprietary virtual reality system. Mm-hmm. Although it's going to be coming out for Oculus Rift, the HTC Vive. Is that what it's called? Vive?
Yeah, the Vive.
And the PlayStation virtual reality system, which isn't even out yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the Oculus Rift version, which I used in concert with two motion controllers, was pretty amazing. I mean, I put this thing on my head, and the first thing I did was look down at myself, and I was wearing a Starfleet uniform.
That's so cool.
That was probably, as much as the rest of it was cool, just seeing my own avatar wearing something completely different was like just an incredible kind of feeling. I can't explain it.
That's really cool.
It was cool. So anyway, you're sitting in this room, and we had one of the game's developers act as the captain, and we all kind of went through our paces and went through this mission, which was kind of a Kobayashi Maru light, where basically you're going in to rescue a bunch of hostages, not hostages, like some sort of distress. I think it was a distress signal. We warped into the system, and as we approached to beam these folks out, naturally the Klingons attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so me as the engineer was obviously in charge of beaming them out. But while I was beaming them out, I also had to make sure that, you know, other systems that the ship might need, like shields and weapons, were online.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was redistributing power where I needed to and so on.
So my question, so you have, you know, your two controllers, right? One in each hand?
Correct.
And then what I saw from the screenshots is it's like you're standing in front of a console and it shows like a character's like hands and fingers mm-hmm. pressing buttons. But how do you like get... use the controllers to be your hands?
It's a good question. You have to, you kind of just move the controllers. The controller will wrap in your hand ergonomically, so it'll feel kind of, it should at least mm-hmm. the one, the Oculus Rift one did, had a good ergonomic feel to it. And you kind of just, you have to get a feel for it, but you're always going to have a virtual finger extended. So it's just
Oh.
kind of a matter of just maneuvering yourself over the right controls
Oh,
and
okay.
then like basically just pushing toward whatever you need to press.
Okay.
But anyway, like I said, we're getting attacked and a lot of cool stuff. Like there was a crew member sitting in front of me, and the ship got hit really hard and she got blown right out of her seat and was
Whoa.
lying on the deck. I looked up at one point and the ceiling of the bridge was starting to crack.
Oh my gosh.
I turned to my left at one point and the helm was sparking.
Whoa, that's nuts.
Yeah, and like all sorts of stuff like that was happening. And there was just, like I said in the article I just wrote, there's a certain amount of teamwork involved in this game. You can't be a lone wolf in this game and decide you're going to do your own thing, because if you do, your entire crew will die. Like, it's really the game is all about teamwork.
Yeah,
So.
that aspect of it reminded me of, I'm trying to remember the name of the game. Is it called Artemis?
Yes, Artemis. This is very much like Artemis.
Yeah,
In
and I
fact, I
played
think it
that,
might be inspired by it.
and that's for people who haven't played it, it's the same idea where you're all members of a bridge crew, but instead of wearing headsets, you're each just sitting at a laptop and you each have different controls. So you're all linked in on a local area network together. And you all have different controls on your screen, again, depending on if you're tactical or engineering or whatever. And you assume different roles. And I've played it with a group of people who were Trekkies, and that was fun because some of them will like start to assume the roles and use the lingo and everything. And
Yep.
like my buddy Thomas is up there in the captain's chair, like swiveling around, like tactical. Where are we on those
Yeah.
photon torpedoes?
Oh yeah. This is totally going to do that. I mean, people are going to be all about th I can this is going to be if this is executed properly, this game, this thing is going to be a Star Trek fan's wet dream. It's
Yeah.
like it's the closest thing we're going to get to a holodeck for a while,
All right, so now that we've talked about how awesome it is, should we tell everyone the disappointing thing about it?
Sure. What is that, Kayla?
Well, the cost.
Yeah, the barrier to entry is rather high.
And it's not because of the game is expensive, it's because buying one of those headsets.
Yeah, the hardware and yeah, the game itself is a standard console price. They're $60
Yeah.
a pop.
Yeah, worth it.
Yeah, totally worth it. But particularly in the instance of the Oculus Rift and the Vive, not only do you have to buy a very expensive headset, you need a very powerful computer to run it on.
Yeah, we're talking like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 computer.
And that's going to be a huge barrier for a lot of folks. Now, the PlayStation VR, which comes out in about 3 weeks from now, as we record this, that one, I think the headset alone goes for 400,
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
and then the launch bundle, which comes with some motion controllers and like a demo disc and all that, is 500.
And
But
then there's going to be a new.
of course, you need to have a PS4 in order
You have to have the
to play.
PS4, and they're making a new PS4, right? That's supposed to be
Right.
even better
Right,
for
the
the VR
PS4
system.
Pro, right. Better processing power, bigger hard drive, blah blah blah.
So it makes me wonder if you have a regular PS4. Like I have a PS4 now at home, but
So do I.
if I plug in my PlayStation VR to that, is it going to be lower quality or laggy because it's not the Pro version?
Yeah, I hope not, because if it is, I'm going to be really pissed.
Yeah, after spending several hundred dollars.
I don't think so, though. I would like to think that we would have. I would like to think Sony would have enough decency to at least caution people that that might happen.
Do we know how much the PlayStation 4 Pro is going to cost?
I think it's at least 400.
Yeah, that sounds about right. In any event, it's going to be way cheaper than buying a computer and a headset.
Oh yeah. I mean, this if Sony pulls this off and this hardware actually works really well, this is going to be the new dawn of virtual reality. There's no question.
Yeah.
Because the install base for the PlayStation 4 is so high, and that ultimately, within a year, that millions of people are going to have these headsets.
Yeah, if they're that good. And because I've not used the PlayStation VR, obviously it's not out yet, and I have not used the new Oculus. I've used one of the first, it was either the first or the second dev version of the Oculus that a buddy of mine had. It was a lot of fun, but I could tell it was still not quite there yet at the time. It did make me feel nauseous using it. So I had some issues with it. But I recently used the HTC Vive, which I would assume is probably much closer to the experience that you had with the new Oculus. And it was just like mind blowing.
Yeah.
It was so incredible. At one point I was, you know, so what you do is you're standing in an area in the real world, and you've set it up ahead of time so that it knows, you've told it where the wall is, for example. So, because mm-hmm. you don't want to walk into the wall. So if you walk towards it, you see a grid appear. Mm-hmm. So it tells you, oh, don't walk any farther. That's the wall. So I went over, my friend had set this up, and I put on the headset and was walking around a bit, and he's like, okay, now try this one. And these were just little like demo games that come with it. And this one was, some actual real photogrammetry data. So real photographs that had been taken of some mountain peak in Washington. I forget which mountain peak, but it was just, you know, towards the summit. It was absolutely gorgeous. You could see for days. And I'm like walking around on the summit of this mountain, and you could see, you know, digital birds flying around and stuff. And he's like, okay, now do this. Now, so if you want to walk further than how you can walk in real physical space, you can use the controller and sort of teleport to various places. So if I want to walk, you know, 10 meters away, I could teleport over there. So he's like, okay, so teleport over to this spot right on the edge of this precipice. So I do that. And I'm sort of standing in the middle of my physical environment. So I'm you know, several feet away from any wall in the real world. And he's like, okay, so now you're standing on the edge of this precipice. He's like, I'm going to walk straight out off the edge. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to walk. And every time I take a step, I have to like test it first, you know, before putting my full weight on it. Yeah. So it's like, because you're looking off, everything in your body is like, no, don't walk off the edge of a cliff. and you're, you know, in your conscious brain, you're telling yourself it's fine. It's not real, but it's so hard because it's so realistic looking and feeling. It's so hard to overcome it.
Yeah. Yeah. The level of realism is pretty impressive. I was so taken by it that like I had an adrenaline rush for a good 10 minutes afterwards. Like I was talking a mile a minute because like it was just such an incredible immersive experience to me that I had never experienced anything like that before.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine like the experience that I had, the realism that I had, but in the like a Star Trek setting. It's just, yeah, like you said, it's just a dream.
I will voice one bit of concern. Mm-hmm. Two things, actually. One, I could see getting a headache after a while wearing these things.
Yeah.
You know, I think after a while, I think that constant having those screens that close to your eyes for that long eventually would cause a problem. And the other thing is, these things, right now we're in the, you know, the infant stage of this.
Yeah.
They're obviously going to get better and better and better. The motion controls will get better. Everything about it will improve. I worry not so much about our generation, but I worry about kids. You know, I don't know about you, but I played a lot of video games as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did too.
But at some point, I would grow weary of it and get up. Like this puts you literally put a headset on, and you're completely tuning out reality. Mm-hmm. You're there. There's nothing to like draw you back into the real world at all. And if you're the kind of kid maybe that is not particularly socially active and that kind of a thing, I could see this being a real problem.
Yeah, well, then there have been books and PhD theses alike written on that subject.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's very obvious. It's very easy to see.
If you haven't read Ready Player One,
I have.
I highly recommend it. Yeah, it's great.
Steven Spielberg is making a movie about that.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, I forgot. He is making a movie of it. And is it, I believe that the audiobook is narrated by Will Wheaton.
I did not know that.
And he is also mentioned in the book. Oh. As, so, you know, Ready Player One, for those of you who haven't read it, is basically what Brian just described. It's people put on this headset and they go into this, like, Second Life kind of a thing. And Will Wheaton is mentioned in the book as one of the sort of most prolific people in this virtual universe. So he's not, I don't know that he's like in charge of anything, but people sort of look to him for guidance of like how to, like, cause there's internal politics and, you know, in total,
right.
Complete, like a completely other world inside.
Other reality. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Totally. Totally. And I always thought it was kind of cool that it was him too, because Wesley and the game and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You know, so, but that, you know, that episode, as goofy as that episode is, there is a certain amount of truth to it.
Yeah, it's funny looking back at that episode because you know exactly the message they're trying to say, which is this thing we're talking about, getting lost in these virtual worlds. And they've talked about that too with like people getting addicted to the holodeck and things like that. Mm. But looking back at that episode, the game, it's just the way that they did it is so silly.
Yep.
I don't know. Every time it's very much a product of its time.
Yep.
In the way that it's presented. The story, not so much, but the presentation of it certainly is.
Yeah, totally. But I'm very excited for it. There's a lot of other cool games coming out. I think Star Wars Battlefront is part of it is going to be retrofitted so that you could play it virtual reality.
No way. Because Star Wars Battlefront is like the most beautiful game that's ever existed.
It really is. It really is. I just wish there were more features that game has.
Agreed.
You kind of run out of things to do with it pretty quickly.
Yeah, you do. But I have to say, as a geologist, like, the scenery is amazing.
Yeah, it really
and
is.
There's a whole, I'm trying to think of it, it's Sullust, the Sullust map, there's like active lava flows everywhere. And the first time I played that level, I basically spent the entire time going and taking screen caps of all of the lava flows.
Yeah, that's a high compliment, actually, coming from you.
Yeah, they're great.
They did their homework. They totally did their homework. But anyway, they're going to retrofit part of that. There's a couple of videos actually out there, I think, of somebody in an X-wing, and then like a Star Destroyer like pulls up over their heads, and you see them look up and see the actual Star Destroyer above them. You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean that's the kind of stuff that you and I and a lot of other people have been dreaming about doing since we were little kids.
Yeah,
like actually being in the cockpit or actually being on the bridge of the Enterprise and stuff like that. So, it's really exciting. It's an exciting time. I just hope we have the wisdom to know how to handle it. That's all.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was sort of inevitable that this technology was going to happen.
It is. It's true. It's true. It's been predicted for many years.
Evidenced by the game.
Obviously. Yep. And many cyberpunk novels and films and everything else.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
A lot of dystopic science fiction has been predicting this for many years.
Yep.
So that's exciting. That is not the only Star Trek game that has been making its way to consoles lately, though.
Indeed.
Right. The Star Trek Online was also in New York, and they were demoing it. It was only like 2 or 3 days before it actually launched worldwide, but, people got a chance to get their hands on it, and I have subsequently downloaded it. I know you have, and I know a few of our other Trek movie colleagues have downloaded it. So what do you think of it so far, Kayla?
I'm really liking it so far. I had actually played Star Trek Online on PC when it came out. God, how long has it been?
I think it was in 2009.
Seven years ago. When that first came out, I was super excited, and I was a Mac user at the time, still am, so I set up a PC especially to play this game. Of course, that was unsustainable, and so, and I was off at grad school and stuff, I didn't have too much time to play it, so I put the game down, not too long after picking it up. And it wasn't until now that I had the chance to play it again because I had no way to set up a PC, no resources to do that. But I do have a PS4. So the idea of it coming to consoles was super exciting for me. So as soon as I could, too. I downloaded it, started a new character. And right away stuff started coming back to me, like the way that Sector Space looks, and the way that you travel between missions and stuff like that. One thing that is interesting to me is that I've found playing as the different races, so you could be either Klingon, Romulan, or Federation, Starfleet, and you can be a number of different aliens within the Federation especially, but I found that it seems to be a relatively different experience. Certainly the story is different. So I started playing as a Starfleet officer. And I made, what's the name of that race? It's the guys that I think we first meet them in The Next Generation when Wesley is doing some training, and they're like blue and they have the vape thing.
What, the Bullion? Not the Bullions.
I was about to say Bullion too, but it's not Bullion, is it? You know, the dudes.
No, they don't have the vapor. I know what you're talking about. What the hell is their name? All right. I know what you mean.
They're just vaping constantly. They were vaping before it was cool. Those dudes. So I made one of them, and he was super cool. I guess it was a girl. She was super cool, and I was having fun, and it was a little buggy. I couldn't get out of the tutorial without my character getting stuck. Like it physically got like my I was on the bridge and the captain was like, "Kayla, go check out this thing. I need you to go to engineering or something. I don't remember." So I'm like, "Okay, great." And I'm heading over and I'm just like, "I can't. I'm just running in place. What do I do?" And then I'm like stuck in this chair. Oh my God. And I went into the menu and there was a button that's like, "I'm stuck." And I pressed it and my character jumped like what to them was, I don't know, 5 meters, but was still stuck in place. And I couldn't figure out how to get unstuck and I was going online. Eventually I just restarted it and it was fine. But just stuff like that is kind of annoying.
Yeah, they've patched it since then.
Yeah, they have, which
is good. It's definitely more stable than it was. But yeah, I noticed there was like draw distance issues for a while. Like a lot of stuff would just pop in out of nowhere. Like stuff was not properly drawn when you'd first enter a level, like stuff like that. But a lot of that's gone away.
And for a while, and I don't know if this has been fixed. Hopefully it has been. For a while in sector space when I'm flying around with my ship, I couldn't see my ship because it was like too dark or something. So I
had... They make the ships very small when you're in sectors. When you're in warp in sector space, it's...
Yeah. You can't like, see, like, I can't see anything. And here's the other
what
thing.
What if I want to admire my ship while it's at warp?
Or, like, know what direction it's facing.
Yeah. That's kind of important. It's hard.
The other thing that I found annoying, and I feel like this is a symptom of being ported from a PC, is that a lot of the text is tiny.
Yeah, I noticed that, too.
So, it'll be a label on something, and I'm like, I can't read that. Because my face isn't right next to the screen like it would be if I were on a PC.
Right.
So there's a couple of little things. But like overall, I really enjoyed the experience. I have to say, I definitely enjoyed playing as a Romulan the most so far.
Really? All right.
Enjoyed the story and I enjoyed the like different character costumes you can have and stuff like that. Have you played at all the Agents of Yesterday expansion?
It's not available yet. Is it for the console?
I don't know that it's available for console yet. I haven't played it at all.
No, I don't believe it's available yet. If Agents of Yesterday, if anybody's wondering, is a TOS expansion for the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's only so far for the PC. I think it's supposed to be out soon for the console.
And that'll
be
cool.
That's an expansion pack, I believe. I don't know if you have to buy that or if it just comes in. I think you probably have to buy it.
That's going to be really cool, though.
That's all original series, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Our pal Vic Mignogna does voiceover work for that, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think Michelle Speck does as well.
Michelle did some voiceover stuff as well, yep.
Yeah, so that'll be fun to listen for them. The game itself, though, I didn't play the game in its PC version, and I had downloaded the Mac client when it became available a couple of years ago, but I never touched it after I heard the horror stories that were coming out about it.
Yeah.
So I was excited about having the ease of use that the console was going to provide. And I've enjoyed it so far. I'm playing Starfleet. My first character, I'm dipping my toe into this. I don't know it that well. So he's a human Starfleet officer. I'm just trying to get my feet wet. I'm going to definitely try to delve into some other races. But for now, I'm using this human Starfleet officer. And it's been fun so far. It for a while, it was almost too easy. The game is now starting to get hard.
Okay.
You know, I'm dealing with more of the Gorn and all this other stuff that's starting to happen. And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. It's coming along nicely, though. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to getting up high enough in rank so that I can start acquiring ships that I really want to use.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm flying a Miranda class. You know, like the Reliant class, which is not one of my favorite kind of ships. So.
Sure.
So I'm looking forward to getting high enough in rank where I could start having, you know, my pick of ships. Of course, I'm going to have to buy these ships, but still.
But still, that's the free-to-play model. I mean, you should point out that the game was free to download and free-to-play, which is pretty awesome for an MMORPG.
Right. And I have no problem. I mean, these folks need to make a living who are making this game. So I have no problem throwing them some money here and there. It's fine.
Yeah.
I've already gotten a tremendous amount of enjoyment from the game, and I haven't paid for a dime yet. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's totally possible to do that.
Yeah.
And it works It works well on console. Like, they didn't just clone it to... Like, a lot of games just clone them from the PC, and so the controls are weird. Yep. You know, it really still requires a keyboard. This one doesn't require a keyboard at all.
Yeah.
I've never found myself reaching for a keyboard.
Yeah, they completely redesigned the control scheme. And it's pretty intuitive. It takes a little bit to get used to it, but once you get into it a little bit, it's fairly easy.
I wish, though, and maybe there is a way to do this, and I just haven't found it. I wish you could invert the flight controls because they're set to inverted. So if you press, you know, if you press up on the joystick, your ship goes nose down, and that, and I'm that's backwards for me. I'm used to having it the other way. So a lot of games let you do either.
Yeah, this got to be a way to do that.
Yeah, we'll see. Otherwise, I'll just have to adjust.
But anyway, I'm excited about that game. I think it's going to do really well on the console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
You know, people don't have to worry about having the right hardware specs for it. If you have the right console, you can play the game.
Yeah, and it's on Xbox and PlayStation and PC. So
right. Unfortunately, they're all running on different servers, so you can't, if your buddy is on Xbox Live.
Yeah, that is, that's really unfortunate. You're on
the
PlayStation
Network, you're out of luck. And if you're a longtime PC player of the game, you cannot port your characters over to the console versions. So, yeah. I mean, that's a bummer for, you know.
Yeah, but it's a bummer for the PC players. Honestly, it's sort of nice for the people who, like me who or you who either have never played before or basically haven't played before, like me.
Right.
Because it's sort of like everyone's starting fresh. Some games that you come into and they're just overrun by super high-level players and it feels like it's hard to get into it. Because you're so far behind the curve. So that's one nice aspect of it.
I agree. No, I think there's a lot of potential in the game, and I think it's going to make a lot of people very happy.
Yeah, me too. I'm already enjoying it. I just hope that I can carve enough time out of my day to keep playing it regularly.
I know. Games like that require a lot of time.
Yeah, it's a time sink.
Really get a lot out of, yeah. But, you know, I have to say, like, Star Trek has such a piss poor history when it comes to video games. I mean, here and there, there's been some good ones over the years.
Yeah.
But a lot of garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to see these two games coming down the pike, you know, like this at the same time, essentially, is really great. It's really great to actually be excited about a Star Trek game for a change.
Yeah, for sure. And just to see them doing well in that type of media.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, especially if Bridge Crew does well, hopefully that'll lead to more games. When I wrote an article, which we will also put a link for in the article, but I talked to one of the developers about whether they will, you know, be adding more missions and whatnot. He indicated that they probably would. And when this was originally announced, the Bridge Crew game, I'm circling back. A lot of people wanted to know if they would be able to, like, buy some sort of an expansion pack where they could play on like the TOS or TNG bridges. And while he didn't come out and say that, it seemed like that was definitely a possibility. So that's very exciting as well.
Maybe they will have the Discovery Bridge.
Maybe.
That would be cool.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of find it hard to believe that they would actually just make these as expansion packs. I would figure they would just build in another game entirely, you know, and sell it that way. And charge into the $60, but what do I know?
Yeah, maybe. But if they have, you know, 10 of these things and they're each $60, no one's going to pay $600 for all 10.
That's a good point.
So.
But, you know, that's a really exciting idea, the notion that, you know, we might be able to play on, you know, I was a big TOS kid. You were a big TNG kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how cool would it be to be on those bridges? I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, totally cool.
I mean, we've sat on reproductions of it, but the reproductions are one thing. To actually be in like a quote-unquote working bridge would be amazing.
Where you're essentially role-playing, and even if you're not talking the talk, you're still having to perform these functions.
Yep.
So it's like you're really integrated into a real thing.
Yeah. So I think there's going to be a lot of that kind of wish fulfillment going on with Star Trek fans the next few years with this stuff.
Well, I wish the best for both Star Trek Online and Star Trek Bridge Crew, because I want to see more out of them, especially with Bridge Crew sort of teetering into this new platform with VR. Like you said, it's going to have, you know, whether or not their game is a success is going to hinge quite a bit on whether or not VR takes off, because it's so expensive.
Right. Right. Yeah. The PlayStation, as we said earlier, is going to be the key. If they nail this hardware down and hit a home run from the get-go, it will be a complete change in how games are presented. In 5 years, you won't believe that you were never playing with a VR headset.
Yeah, no kidding, because it's so cool.
And it really is. So, exciting times, exciting times.
Well, before we go, I wanted to make sure to bring something else up. It's kind of off topic, so I saved it for the end. But when we were talking about the game earlier, I couldn't help but think of a YouTube video I saw recently by a group. I think they're in the Bay Area, and they're making these what's essentially drunk history, but retelling of Star Trek episodes.
Really?
And so they basically get someone who like loves a certain episode. They get completely drunk, and then they try to explain what the episode is about. And then they have their friends like act it out with like intentionally half-assed sets and acting, just like Drunk History, and it's hilarious. And one of them they did was The Game, and I remember the way they showed, you know, they had those like shutter glasses that was like the game glasses, and then they would hold up like, you know, you saw it from at one point you'd see from the first person perspective, and you see this like cup come up and like a ball flies into it. It's just cracking me up so hard. But yeah, it's called Tales from 10 Forward. And you can find that out. You can find that on YouTube, and it's hilarious. And I highly recommend it, checking it out. I think they have 3 episodes so far of the drunk Star Trek. So
Definitely checking that out. That's brilliant.
It's very good, and yeah, highly recommend it to everyone who's listening to go check that out as soon as you can.
Cool. All right. I think that might be it for this installment of the Shuttle Pod.
I think so.
In case anybody's wondering, our pal Mr. Whitley isn't able to be with us today, but hopefully will be with us on our next installment.
Definitely.
We miss him and his Trek anecdotes.
Yes, and I think he's going to have a good one for us next time. He's working on some Trek anecdotes.
Yes, he is. So, until next time, this is Brian.
This is Kayla.
And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Later.